Hello, and welcome to Days of Our Lives, Mint's audio history series on liberalization and the ordinary man. Here, you will hear stories of how life changed for most people, be it the sunshine boy or the CEO following the reforms of 1991 in their voices.
Last, you heard Dinesh Dobri's story of migration and job opportunities created by a booming F&B sector. Today, you will find out about the before and after scenario of running a family business in India vis-a-vis economic reforms.
Like the license, the Inspector Raj, where inspectors would come in, they would check you, they would threaten you. Inspectors were there every second day. Sometimes the PF inspector, sometimes the ESI inspector. I mean, all the time they were here, all the time they were extracting money from you. They were threatening you all the time with dire consequences.
In terms of what, we'll revoke your license?
Or... yeah, I mean, in terms of like, we'll take action against you for small, small mistakes that could happen. When we are putting everything on record, we are paying all the duties, all the taxes, then we were not very happy with the inspector trying to extract money from us. So that was a big harassment. All this slowly went away.
Are they still inspectors?
They are there, but they are not authorized to come into the company unless they have a DM's permission, written permission.
Meerut, home to the first battle of India's independence against the British, the city where Mangal Pandey fired the shots that would echo across the subcontinent in 1857, but this is still modern history. Archaeological evidence points to settlements here that date back to the Indus Valley civilization. Situated 70 kilometers northeast from New Delhi, today Meerut is one of the bigger cities in the National Capital Region. This is a city that in many ways is emblematic of India today, where economic prosperity go hand in hand with strained infrastructure and unplanned growth. From sports manufacturing to scissor production, the city is home to several industries, both old and new. One such industry is Saru smelting. Sanjeev Jain, 54, director of Saru Copper Alloy Semis Private Limited, takes us through the story of his company.
So my name is Sanjeev Jain. I am now 54 years old, working for a company as a director. This is Saru Copper Alloy Semis Private Limited. And we have been in business since 1942. This is the parent company Saru Smelting Private Limited. And so we've been all into manufacturing metals, non-ferrous metals largely. I was born in Meerut and I studied in Meerut for some time. And then I went to a hostel in Missouri and then went down to Stephens to my college.
Okay.
And then I've been here since 83, working in the company. So in 1988, we had a separation. It's a family-owned company. Saru Copper came up in 1988.
From the days of quotas for copper allocation, as the metal industry was reserved solely for the public sector, to protected markets that actually meant complete insulation to the pitfalls of using imported machinery, Jain takes us through the journey of his company and the ups and downs it has seen over the past 25 years.
We were a protected lot in terms of metals. So we had no exposure to the export side or to the world as such. We had quotas. Hindustan Copper Limited was the only company which was handling the sale of copper. And they were just doing 30,000, 40,000 tons of metal, which was fine at that point of time.
What was the process of acquiring it? Did you have to file tenders?
We were supposed to, first of all, get a quota, that how much of copper can we lift in a month or in a year.
And how was that quota decided?
That quota was decided based on whatever allocations Hindustan Copper could give you. Okay. Right? And your good relations with them.
Ah, so right? That's what it was.
Right.
So what was your quota at that time in 88?
I probably may not remember, but something like maybe 5-10 tons a month. So we had to also depend on the local metal, local market, which used to be then on premium. But post-liberalization, things opened up. We had private companies coming in, like Sterlite Copper, Birla Copper. And so they had larger manufacturing base. There was a big availability of copper. I didn't have to go and buy it on premium.
Did they do away with the quota system?
Yes, then the quota system went away.
And because when did this come into impact?
I think these people started coming in 94, 95 types.
So within a couple of years.
Yeah.
If you ever visit a factory or a manufacturing unit in India, you will find yourself through rows and rows of big machines, mostly of German make, thundering away. You will see men, both young and old, some engineers, some workers, stand nearby, clearly unfazed by the roaring as the machines work away at a speed barely discernible to the human eye. But what is a common sight today was a rare one till 25 years ago, characterized as India's trade policy was by high tariffs and pervasive import restrictions, which included impossible duties. Today, import duties have drastically come down, the percentage varying from industry to industry. Those who could afford to pay duties, like Jain's father, still imported machines but in limited numbers. Today, of course, the situation is different, not just in monetary terms but also manufacturing.
So I have a world's best machine, that is Buhler rolling mill, okay? It's a German machine. My dad claimed that he got it from Germany in 71 for maybe some 23,000 Deutschmarks or something, that he tells me. And in 91 or 92, he said that this machine, the rolls of this machine have absolutely become useless, and we need to get somebody from that company to come and do the service. So we wrote to them, and the quotation they sent, so my dad said that this is the cost of the quotation, which is 5 times more than the cost of the machine. But today the same equipment is available in India. For 50 years back, this was not the case.
You think opening up has done this?
Absolutely. We have world's best of the machines, but that time you had no choice. There was nothing available in India, and still we wanted to have the best of the machines. So you pay any amount of duty. That's a different thing. But it was only available to very handful of people. It was not for general, that anybody can just go out. Today you go to Düsseldorf or you go to Hanover, you will find 30-40% Indians there. People who are just simple Punjabis from Ludhiana, who have that talent. But today they have the exposure also. And they create the same thing in India, you know, out of that exposure. Plus, once it is opened up, you start attending exhibitions. You go out, there are no restrictions for your money. You go and see quality. You go and meet customers. Unless we didn't open up, unless we didn't go out, we couldn't understand what we are talking about, what quality is all about.
The idiom frog in a well is usually meant to denote a person who refuses to move beyond his or her comfort zone. But we are going to stretch it a little bit here and apply it to Indian businesses in a pre-reforms India, hedged in as they were by restrictive policies vis-a-vis international trade. Let Jen tell you about how this played out. Listen carefully. There is a rinse-soap reference here.
Right. See, whatever we were producing here, we were supplying to the Indian defense, we were supplying to the Indian customers. And so we were pretty happy that our quality is good, because we had no idea what exactly quality is all about. So when we started sending samples to our foreign buyers, they said, no, the surface is not very good, the finish is not very good. So we asked them to send their samples, and then we saw there was very bright, very good finish. The drawing compounds, what we were using, were basically rinse soap, which is supposed to be very good, no doubt about it. But then there were proper chemicals for it, expensive French chemicals. Then we started getting into the gear of understanding the difference of quality.
So your business did actually grow after?
Yes, I mean, today, if you say, at least in the last 18 years, I will say, my business is now today 75% is all exports.
Were you anyhow doing business with international companies?
No.
You weren't.
The first time I started was in 1991.
And what was, did they want to do business with India? What was India's...
We didn't have much opportunities, first of all. Not much exposure. But let's say we got some very small inquiries and we quoted them. But we were not price competitive.
Jain has already mentioned about the public sector's complete monopoly over the copper trade. He has stories of waiting outside the offices of Hindustan Copper Limited, cooling his heels while waiting for one official or the other to clear his paperwork of clearances being stalled because of red tape. Today's reality is a far cry from those days.
Now today they can't afford all that. Today, I mean, come along, Sterlite is there, Birla Copper is there, Hindustan Copper is there. I can go and buy it from anybody. In fact, they come and visit us. Earlier, they never realized that there was a company in existence also.
When Jen first sent his samples to international clients who returned them for lack of quality to today, when his business consists solely of 75% exports, it has been a long journey over the course of the past 25 years. But the more things have changed, the more they have remained the same when it comes to infrastructure and corruption. Much like entrepreneur Deep Kalra, who lamented the lack of proper infrastructure that ends up distracting business owners, Jen talks about how infrastructure and still prevalent red tapism can and actually does impact India's reputation internationally.
I have my customer in the US And he says, Sanjeev, I don't understand what is happening in India. You guys say that you have sent the material from your mill. It has loaded on to the vessel after 15, 16 days. So between your country, it's taken you 15 days. And from China, it takes no time and it reaches in the US in 30 days. So how are you going to compete? You can compete on your quality, you can compete on your prices, but this part of the service, how is India going to compete? Unless you don't improve your infrastructure, unless you don't improve all these things. There are ships which are on queue and they don't get berth, and so there will be delays. Monsoons will happen, then there will be delays. Some dharna may happen somewhere, there will be delays. I remember last year, we were exporting from ICD Dadri, right? So for 4 days, my shipment could not get cleared. And my agent used to tell me, sir, aaj ho jayega, kal ho jayega. I said, yaar, mera sale hona hai, sale miss ho jayegi meri. It's better you get it done. So after 4 days, I read in the paper that from last 4 days, the work is under strike. People are not working because one of the superintendents was caught taking bribe. So in support of that guy, everybody has stopped working. So then I called up the agent. I said, yaar, tu mere ko 4 din se keh raha hai. 4 din se to kaam band pada. I've just read in the paper. Bola, haan sir, main kya batata aapko? Wo ek superintendent ko pakad liya bribe lete hue. Aur wahan pe sabne kaam band kar diya. Hamare yahan to documentation clear hone mein time lagta hai bhi. Only because of the, honestly, bribery.
Kitna time lag? I mean, this is what I wanted to ask you. What are the challenges there?
It can clear in one day, right? But the first thing is that they will not trust you. Why will not trust you? Because they want money from you. Simple si baat hai. Otherwise, as an exporter, I have a 20 years of record. You have never found a single problem in my documentation or my work or anything. And this thing, I don't know if it can ever change. Otherwise, today you simply get the documents. You don't have to do nothing. You have to verify the documents and that's it. But 3 days, 4 days, the documents are not verified. So it takes time. And by the time, let's say, you have designated vessel that you have to go on, you will miss the date. The shipment will not reach on time. So you are late by another week. So people at time, the customer at time feel, these guys lie. These guys lie. They don't actually despise the material from their mill. They give us the false documentation. Otherwise, how can it be possible? I mean, it's beyond them. How can it be possible that it will take you 2 weeks or 3 weeks to ship the material from Mumbai? And we have no answer to it.
If one were to look at the broad brushstrokes of the metal manufacturing industry through the prism of Jain's story, then there are some very obvious changes. Quotas are gone, private players are here, businesses have boomed, but look closely, and the factors that were a big drawback 25 years ago still continue to be there. And the devil, as they say, is in the details. Interview conducted by Nikita Doval. This podcast has been produced by Anik Biswas.